You're listening to Clinical Conversations, a Journal Watch podcast. It's for the week ending November 13, and it's podcast number 65. I'm Joe Elia. We have a conversation about the value of renal artery angioplasty in the face of atherosclerosis. First, this review of recent important clinical news items. There hasn't been much time since our last edition, just a couple of days ago, for the news to refresh itself, but there are two items of note. First, the CDC has stopped counting 2009 H1N1 cases on the basis of lab confirmation. It's now using estimates of the disease burden, as it does with other seasonal flus. This flu is different, however, and is in its seeming preference for younger hosts already has the numbers of deaths higher than has been seen among young people since the CDC began keeping these records in the late 1950s. Second, putting patients in the prone position during mechanical ventilation for acute respiratory distress syndrome doesn't have any advantages, according to an AMA study in about 350 patients. 4-week mortality didn't differ between groups randomized to prone or to supine ventilation. However, an editorialist says that for patients at risk of imminent death, it makes sense to try prone ventilation because several studies have shown that it can increase oxygenation. Now, on to the interview. You're listening to Clinical Conversations. This week's New England Journal of Medicine has a study that tries to answer the question of whether renal artery revascularization is superior to medical therapy alone in patients with atherosclerosis. According to one estimate, in the U.S., roughly 15% of newly diagnosed patients undergo this angioplasty. In this study, investigators randomized some 800 patients in the UK, Australia, and New Zealand, either to revascularization plus standard medical therapy or to medical therapy alone. Here to tell us what happened next are two of the ASTRAL investigators. ASTRAL, by the way, is an acronym for angioplasty and stenting for renal artery lesions. We have Dr. Philip Calra of Salford Royal Hospital in Salford. He is the lead nephrologist on the study. And we have Dr. Jonathan Moss of the North Glasgow University Hospitals, Glasgow. He's the radiology lead. Welcome to both of you. So tell us briefly, Dr. Calra, what happened to those two groups?
So in the ASTRAL study, we randomized the 806 patients over the course of a seven-year period from 2000 to 2007. As you point out, 400 patients were randomized to the revascularization and 400 to medical therapy. Medical therapy was also given in the revascularization arm. And when we looked at the primary outcome measure of the study, which was the change in renal function over time, as measured by the reciprocal of the creatinine plot. Now, the reciprocal creatinine really is an estimate of loss of GFR, really, over time.
Mm-hmm. GFR is glomerular filtration rate,
exactly, right. Yes. So when we looked at the primary outcome, there was no difference between the two groups in all comers over time. So the renal functional outcome was the same in the two groups. And then when we look at the secondary outcomes, these were systolic blood pressure control, diastolic blood pressure control, cardiovascular and renal events, and mortality. Again, we found no difference between the groups, but there were some interesting overall characteristics that are worth sort of pointing out. Those are that the systolic blood pressure did actually fall in both groups. So by 1 year after entry into the study, in both groups, there was a 7 millimeter drop, 7 millimeter mercury drop in systolic blood pressure. And by 5 years, where clearly the number of patients had declined, and we haven't got long-term data in all patients as yet, but we are going to get that. But by 5 years, we found that the drop was of the order of 12 millimeters of mercury in both groups, so no difference between them. A lesser drop in diastolic blood pressure, but still significant compared to baseline in both groups. In terms of cardiovascular events, you're looking at a 50% event rate by 5 years, so it's about 10% per year in both groups. Again, no difference between them. And mortality, identical outcomes. So we were looking at a 40% mortality rate by 5 years in the two groups. So that translates into 8% per year for either the stenting group or for the medically treated group.
And again, so not a great deal of difference between the groups.
Difference. No, not at all.
And earlier studies had shown no difference, but as you say in the article, those studies were underpowered statistically to detect a true difference. Were you surprised by the findings?
By the findings of Astral, I probably wasn't surprised, if being truthful. So the earlier studies, of which there were three published back in the early 2000s, were all very, very small, and the largest of these had just over 100 patients, 106 patients actually, also published in the New England Journal of Medicine. So the three studies total just 210 patients, and they were, as you say, they were not adequately powered to look at renal functional change or mortality. They were too small for that. There was a subsequent study that actually we did not actually quote within the Astral manuscript in the New England Journal, which is another study from Holland that had 160 patients in it, and this was called the STAR study, published earlier this year in the Annals of Internal Medicine, and that also was a negative study. In that study, there was quite a high number of patients in the revascularized arm, so the 80 patients who were randomized to have stenting, there were a lot of patients, I think it was 40% of them, who did not actually get the procedure. Mm. So there was a high number who did not, and so only, I think, 48 out of 80 actually got the stent. So you know, overall, given that previous literature, and despite the fact that it was underpowered, and knowing our experience of the heterogeneity of outcomes in patients with atheromatous renal artery stenosis, I have to say that I wasn't surprised by the overall sort of null result of Astral.
Okay. And so you posed the question at the beginning of the research, how definitively do you think you've answered it?
Yeah, John Mark speaking. No trial is completely perfect, and we think this is a very good study and the best so far, but it's not 100% solid. I think this, you know, rules out a benefit, or the chance of missing a benefit must be down to single figures, less than 10% chance that there is a difference and that we have actually missed it in this trial. You know, and I think, you know, the other studies, as Phil has mentioned, have been small and underpowered, but there have been attempts by two different groups to put them together in a so-called meta-analysis. And even when they've all been put together, there hasn't been a smell of a favorable outcome or difference between the two groups. So I think that, plus the smaller STAR study, plus this study, really, you know, I think it's pretty good, solid level one evidence that if there is a benefit, it's pretty damn small, and we haven't managed to identify the group, the small group, in whom that benefit is present, if indeed it is.
So the bottom line is that there's risk with angioplasty in this situation, but not much benefit. Is that fair?
Yeah, John Moss speaking. I mean, there is always risk with angioplasty and stenting of any artery. In the carotid artery, for example, you can cause strokes, and you have to balance that with the benefit of trying to prevent strokes. And similarly in the kidney, when you're putting these stents into the renal artery, there will be a small number of patients who will suffer complications either from the at the groin where you put the device in, and that can cause hematomas and problems with the artery to the leg, and with several of those. You can also damage the kidney itself putting the stent into the renal artery. In other words, you can knock off the atheromatous material, the very stuff you're trying to stabilize. You can knock that off into the kidney. That's called cholesterol embolization, and that can be quite damaging to a kidney, particularly to a kidney that's already damaged. So there's also a risk-benefit ratio to consider, and really, in the absence of any benefit in the study. Really, this is all loaded against the, you know, the complications that, you know, there were I think 23 patients out of the total group that underwent stenting suffered a serious complication. By a serious complication, we're talking about things that start with death. I think that was two patients.
Mm-hmm.
Irretrievable damage to the kidney, blocking the kidney artery off completely. So, you know, those are fairly, have a fairly major impact on an individual patient should it happen to them.
So, given all of that evidence and those complications, what might primary care physicians be doing next week that they weren't doing last week before they saw your results?
So, Phil Calra again. I think it's important to take on board the mortality data, actually, though. We're talking about a very, very high-risk group of patients. These are people with generalized atheroma, half of them in Astral, which is very similar to other studies and to databases of renal and vascular patients. Half of them had coronary artery disease, symptomatic coronary artery disease. And we know from historic data that the mortality rate of this group of patients is very, very high. So if you go back to the early 2000s and looking at the US Medicare data, then we're looking at a 16% annual mortality of this type of patient compared to about 6% mortality of the other Medicare recipients aged over 65.
Mm-hmm.
So a threefold risk of mortality. Now, looking at the data in Astral, in both groups, even the medical treated patients alone, the mortality rate was 8%. So we are seeing perhaps an improvement in our vasculoprotective therapies. So what I would like to emphasize for the primary care physicians is the importance of, you know, treating patients with generalized atheroma, those with peripheral vascular disease, those who are likely to have a renal artery stenosis, with very, you know, optimized dosing of our current vascular protective therapies and not to hesitate giving those. So we're talking here statins, we're talking perhaps antiplatelet therapy and getting the blood pressure under control with the use of ACE inhibitors, angiotensin receptor blockers, etc. Because, I mean, the general feel is that these are well tolerated in the majority of patients with renal artery stenosis.
Well, that's good advice. Let me just ask one other question. You mentioned that you're going to be collecting follow-up data. Is are you collecting that now, and is that sort of on the ways?
Phil Carrigan.
Yeah.
So yes, we have the organization in place to actually collect ongoing data from Astral, certainly out to another 3 years. So we would hope that every surviving patient will have been followed for a minimum of 5 years. And, you know, we will, of course, then report again on the longer-term outcome of our patients. Because currently, in the Astral publication in the New England Journal, you'll see from the numbers of patients at each time point that are clearly we've got strong power out to about 2 and 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The average follow-up is in fact 34 months.
Mm-hmm.
But in due course we'll have very strong follow-up out to sort of 5 years and beyond, and that might give us some further insights.
Well, we look forward to seeing those results, Dr. Calra, and I want to thank you and thank Dr. Moss as well for your time talking with me today.
Thanks very much.
Welcome.
You can reach Clinical Conversations at 1-617-440-4374, or you can write to me, JELIA, at jwatch.org. All earlier podcasts are all available at podcasts.jwatch.org, where links for all news stories can also be found. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time. Thank you for listening.